Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling! Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling. I am one half of your scholarly host, Tyler Ward, and that's it. Unfortunately, Andrew is indisposed at the moment. He's doing very important things, as always. So it's just going to be me today talking to you guys. Today, we are going to do a quick little impromptu review of AEW Full Gear 2022. It just happened this past weekend. Hope everyone is having a good time getting ready for the holidays. I know Andrew and I are both very busy when it comes to that stuff. I think he's got some family in town visiting him. I'm about to go leave town to visit some family on my end. So we're trying to squeeze wrestling in between life, which gets very difficult at times, but we are happy to do it for you listeners. So quick update just to keep everyone posted. So we do have plans. I know we talked recently about doing a large deep dive into the legal issues going on in the wrestling world, specifically the lawsuits the Vince McMahon has undergone that eventually was the reasoning for him being pushed out of the company in the past, and then other legal things going on in terms of the CM Punk Elite issues in AEW, MLW lawsuits and things like that. So we wanted to bring the Sensational Sarah, our legal counsel, on to give us a professional view of these ongoing things and kind of what we know and what can be extrapolated from the information we have and what we think is going to go on. But so we want to give you guys a in-depth, thorough episode on this. What we will be doing post Thanksgiving, once we have a little bit of downtime, everyone comes back and we can knock it together for you guys. That might be one episode, might be two episodes. We'll see how bulky it is and how much juicy information we got for you. But in the interim, a key word we're going to be hearing with this pay-per-view. In the interim, I'm going to do a quick review of Full Gear for you guys. It was this past weekend. I thought it was a great show. I had a good time watching it. I hope everybody else did as well. But we're going to go ahead and start at the top. AEW Full Gear 2022 happened this Saturday, November 19th. At the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. Not a bad arena. I mean, it looked pretty good from what I could see. I can't say I've been there myself. I think Andrew may have been. I know he's far more local to that area than myself. but yeah, it was good. It was not too bad. It was a 13-match card, if you include the zero-hour pre-show that they post on YouTube and everything. Three matches took place on that, 10 on the main card. Not bad. Honestly, in my personal opinion, again, it was rough. It was about, if you include the pre-show, it was about 4.5 hours, maybe 4:45, which is a lot. That's a lot of wrestling. Main show itself was near 4 hours, which for me personally is a little much, but it was okay. The show, it moved quickly enough. I can't say it flew by, but it went quickly enough. In my older age, I'm finding that watching these later wrestling shows gets a little more difficult. There's definitely a time towards the later matches where I can feel the eyelids getting real heavy, and I have to be shaken awake by someone to remind me that there's still wrestling going on. But this one wasn't too bad. It was pretty good. For the 10 matches that they did have on the main card, they moved fairly quickly. Not too bad. Of course, they took their times on some important ones. Overall, I mean, again, 13 matches, when your longest match you're looking at was just under 24 minutes, that being the main event, which, I mean, the main event should get the most time allotted to it. But it was good. It was a good time. So we're going to start right at the top with the 0 Hour pre-show. First match was the big 10-man tag match, the Best Friends, Trent and Chuck, with Orange Cassidy, Rocky Romero, and Danhausen, facing the Factory, QT Marshall, Aaron Solo, Lee Johnson, Nick Camarado, and the new Cole Carter. If you remember, if you've been watching AEW recently, Cole Carter is the guy who debuted a couple weeks ago as, like, fake Sting. And I got nothing against the kid. I don't know anything about him. I just want to talk about that debut. I think that's a really poor decision. And AEW has done this before, where they have had like a secret debut in the ring on television. Like, lights go out, a long enough pause that people are like, oh, what's going to happen? Lights come up, and then there's a nobody who no one knows, and therefore you get no reaction. That's what they did with Satnam Singh when he debuted with Jay Lethal and them. Guy shows up, no one knows who he is, so you're not getting cheers, you're not getting boos. It's just kind of like, meh, all right. The same thing with Cole Carter. He comes out in this Sting gimmick, and then eventually, you know, he does the mask reveal. He removes the mask, and the second he takes it off, I was like, who dat? I mean, I didn't recognize him, and clearly the entire arena who was there did not as well. But hopefully this is a good spot for him with the Factory. Factory did not get the win here. Best Friends and their cohorts did, with the assistance of Danhausen. So Danhausen was announced on the team, but did not make the entrance with them in the beginning, only to come out right at the end to save the day, if you will. And it was funny. We were watching, and it was this was the veriest evil that Danhausen had looked. There was no very nice for this Danhausen tonight. It was just very evil. He just showed up and he got the pinfall. I'm not sure, but that might be Danhausen's first pinfall in AEW. So congrats to him. It was a solid match. Good showing for everybody. A little bit of fun. Second match on the pre-show, you got Ricky Starks and Brian Cage. So this was a semifinal match in the Eliminator tournament for the AEW World Championship. I thought it was a great pairing, Starks and Brian Cage. They had the history of being with Team Taz. Of course, Brian Cage is going to be your powerhouse in this match. He's going to be able to throw Starks around. Ricky Starks, though, I think Starks is very good. At least recently, he's found a great way to work with big guys, just like his past feud that he had with Powerhouse Hobbs recently. He's found a great way to work with big guys, tell really good, engaging stories that keep you invested, and he's a viable contender. Like, it's not completely out of the realm when he beats a Brian Cage or a Powerhouse Hobb. It's like, oh, I get it. All right, this makes sense. Perfect. Good win for him. And Starks did. He got the win, which puts Ricky Starks in the finals of the AEW World Championship Eliminator Tournament. He's going to face All Ego Ethan Page, the winner of that match, getting a title shot at your new AEW World Champion. That we're going to talk about in a little bit. In terms of going forward, who I hope wins that tournament and gets the shot at the title, it's most likely that whoever faces MJF is going to lose, and that's okay. I think Starks is probably the better option, or at least the more exciting feud. I want to see that promo. I want to see Starks and MJF. I want to see that. But at the same time, like, I don't want Starks to just be a stepping stone for MJF. But It's totally fine. It's a perfectly fine spot. It's a good spotlight for him. It'll be his first, I think his first world title shot in his AEW career. So nothing wrong with that. And again, All Ego Ethan Page is also a great option. They're both very good heels. They're both really good promos, and it could be a lot of fun watching them go back and forth with an MJF. excuse me. Third match and final match on the pre-show. This was great. This was Eddie Kingston defeating Jun Akiyama in a singles match, went about 10 minutes. So my favorite part about this was actually the promo beforehand. So they're back backstage talking to Eddie Kingston right before his match, and leading up to this, you know, Eddie, they've talked about how, you know, he's always been a massive fan of Japanese wrestling and that style of wrestling, the strong style. And that really got him into wrestling and wanted to, you know, inspired him to go forward and pursue this. Jun Akiyama being one of his heroes, one of the people he watched for years and years and wished that he could finally wrestle him one day. So the promo in the back, I think it might have been Renee, it might have been one of the other backstage commentators interviewing him, asking him, like, you know, how are you feeling? Are you ready for the match? Whatever. And Eddie's literally just speechless back there. He's well, I don't really know what to say. Like, and it's so weird. It's such a unique Eddie Kingston thing in that if any other wrestler gave that promo, it would come across as them either forgetting their lines or just, you know, being bad, being not good at promo, not practice, not knowing what they're doing. But because it's Eddie Kingston, it comes across so genuine. It comes across so sincere of, like, he really is just speechless. He's this kid who's getting a dream come true of fighting this hero of his who he's always wanted to, and he doesn't have the words for it. And it just comes across so sincere that it was so engaging. That promo itself, like, I was like, man, that's great. And it was a really good match too. It was a great match, hard hitting. Jun Akiyama, he is an older guy, he can still go. Absolutely. They had a really good match. Eddie ultimately did get the win with the Hurricane, that spinning back fist to get the pinfall. Great pre-show, honestly. These three matches, great. Keep the energy going, the pace moving. Get you excited for the main card. So it was good. So we're going to kick off the main card. First match of the night. Of course, when we're watching this, like, with friends, we always try to get together and watch the pay-per-views. We always like to take bets, you know, like, oh, you know, what match is going to be the first match you think? What's the opener? All that. And I think the opener is going to be the six-man, the Elite Death Triangle match. Great return for the Elite. Energy will be high. Everyone will love that. It'll be great. Sarah was like, it's probably going to be the cage match, I think. Jungle Boy Luchasaurus. And then another friend of ours, they were suggesting, like, it's probably going to be the four-way, maybe the Ring of Honor World Championship. But it was the cage match. And I'm not sure if that's because they knew that match was going to be as hype as it was, or that they work under the assumption of, like, well, if we knock the cage out the very first match, we can get rid of it and we don't have to worry about it the rest of the night. Either one is viable. but yeah, it was an amazing match. A heated blood feud at this point. Jungle Boy Jack Perry. That's correct. He is, in fact, Jungle Boy Jack Perry now, officially. He's not just Jungle Boy. They have made the transition into him being Jack Perry, which is fine. I love that, actually. I think it was inevitable. It was gonna happen. If they want him to have more longevity in the company and also have some sort of crossover potential going forward in his career, it just makes sense to have him go by Jack Perry. It's the familial connection with his father, obviously, is something that can appeal for outside, entertainment outlets and things like that. So I love it. I'm cool with it. Eventually, I'm curious if they're ever going to just drop the Jungle Boy entirely. I don't necessarily want that, but I understand the switch to Jack Perry. And he had his face off against Luchasaurus, his former tag team partner, longtime friend, in a cage match. So they, of course, built this match up, talked about how, you know, Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, you know, they've known each other forever. Jungle Boy, his first training in professional wrestling, it was with Luchasaurus in the same camp or whatever classes and stuff they took. And it's interesting to understand how far back the friendship goes between them, and then getting the rivalry that we have now, this like heated blood feud that's been spurred on by Christian Cage. It was great, and you can tell it with two guys who know each other this well. It was a really well done match. Great cage match, honestly. A lot of good spots. Jungle Boy got color very early. I think, you know, took the standard spot, thrown into the cage, and then I think he bladed while the camera was somewhere else. But it was good. A lot of great spots. Jungle Boy, I'm not sure how often the man blades, but it was deep. It must have been, because he was bleeding all over the place. He had a lot of blood going on. Of course, the story of the match here is, you know, Jungle Boy having to overcome the bigger, stronger Luchasaurus, who's just throwing him around the ring like a rag doll. But it was very good. This match went just under 20 minutes, and there were a lot of great moments, a lot of near falls, a lot of close calls that really got the crowd into it and excited. I think Christian Cage got ejected at some point because the action worked its way out of the cage onto the main floor. And that might have been the difference maker for Jack Perry, that he eventually overcame Luchasaurus and got the submission victory. It was great to see. I'm not sure if this is going to be the end of their feud, but it definitely feels like a chapter in. I would like to see Jungle Boy move on to something after this. You could put him in a title picture, either for the TNT title, maybe the All-Atlantic Championship, something like that. Honestly, he could absolutely be a contender for MJF in the future moving forward. I'm excited to see what they do with him post this feud. Luchasaurus as well, I'm not sure what he's got up for him, if they're going to keep Christian Cage in his corner, what's up with that. But great feud. This was a great match, hopefully a blow off for it, and then we can see these two guys do some other things. But the following match was, of course, the six-man tag match, the long-awaited return of the Elite, ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks versus Death Triangle, Pac, Penta, and Rey Fénix. Man, what is there to be said about this match? So obviously they announced that the Elite were coming back on Dynamite. And while it's not my favorite, stuff's falling over my desk everywhere. Excuse me. While it's not my favorite way to do a return like this, I understand it. So the Elite's been gone for almost 2 months now, post the CM Punk debacle, and people have been awaiting their return. Obviously, when they do come back with three fan favorites like the Bucks and Kenny, it's going to be a massive pop, a massive excitement for people to see it. So I understand the business side of it, saying, you know what, if we announce it at Dynamite that they will be returning at full gear, that's going to equal so many more pay-per-view buys, ticket sales if they're still available, etc. So I get it. I do, you know, it's just the wrestling fan in me loves the idea of like the mystery opponent who you don't know who it's going to be, and then eventually they show up and the pop, it's huge, everyone's excited, it's amazing. But that's okay. It was still so hype in the arena when it was on the way. People were very excited. So I have to talk about the Elite's entrance. Man, that was crazy. Death Triangle's in the ring. You know, the lights go out, and there's this like slideshow thing going on the Titantron. That's just all these words talking about, you know. I don't even remember what it was. I was reading it and I was like, this sounds like some weird post-apocalyptic novel or something, but it was pretty good. And they mentioned something in one of the last like sentences of like the Wayward Sons. And we were watching it together and like Sarah said something to me and she was like, Wayward Son. And I was like, what? And then she started singing Carry On My Wayward Son by Kansas. And I was just like, that would be so silly. Okay. And then Carry On My Wayward Son started playing and I literally lost it. I was like, no, they cannot. They did not. Oh man. It was so wild. It was both the silliest and coolest entrance I have seen. It was incredible. The Elite returned to Carry On My Wayward Son. It was great. The people were super excited. A lot of cheers, a lot of pops in the audience for it. So it was great. Wonderful return. I doubt they're going to be using that going forward, but it was a lot of fun. But the match itself was naturally incredible. Just under 20 minutes itself. It was amazing. All six of these guys are just so good at professional wrestling. So good at it. It was great. Sarah was telling me beforehand. Obviously, she was like, we're like, what, you know, who's excited for what match? What are you excited for? And Sarah was like, the six man, obviously. And I was like, oh, really? Why? And she was like, because my two favorite matches ever. One, the tag match between the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros in the cage for the tag belts, whatever pay-per-view ago. And I was like, yep, great. Well, probably the best cage match I've ever seen. Got it. She's like, one of my second favorite matches ever was the triple threat between Pac, Orange Cassidy, and Kenny Omega. And this match is about to have five of those six people. I was like, damn, that's really good logic. This is going to be a great match. And it absolutely was. It was incredible. Ultimately, in the shocker, the Elite did not get the win. Death Triangle retains their titles with some shenanigans, which I actually love because they're continuing the story that they've already been telling for weeks now with Death Triangle. Pac not being one to shy away from cheating to get a win, while Rey Fénix is trying to do the noble thing, trying to win on his own skills, not by breaking the rules. And ultimately, he was convinced this match. He was turned to the dark side by Pac. He used the hammer for the ring bell to crush Kenny Omega in the head as he was set up for a one-winged angel, got the roll-up pin. I don't hate it. I love that, actually. I think it's a great choice. Shocking that the Elite lost their return match, but hey, good storytelling. I love the idea. And you know who else loved the idea? Tony Khan. He loved it so much, in fact, he was like, hey, that was a great match. What if we did it seven more times? And they announced the best of seven series for Death Triangle versus the Elite in the next coming weeks, I guess, couple months. We're going to do that same match seven more times in seven different cities. And it's great. That's brilliant. It's awesome. It was an incredible match. I'm so curious to see how they're going to be able to do that match seven more times. Keep it fresh. Keep it interesting. And I'm on board. I love it. I love to see it. It's super like old school wrestling feel of like territory days where guys would just do the same match in different cities, but because, you know, cable TV wasn't really a thing back then for wrestling, you could do the same match and just travel it. It's like a theater show. You rehearse it, you do it enough that it becomes muscle memory, and then you just do that performance for different crowds as you'd go. So they're just going to rehearse that match and do it for different crowds as they go. Of course, now in a modern sense, they're going to have to mix it up. They're going to have to change it because your same crowds on television are going to be seeing that match over and over. But again, I have faith in this group of performers that they'll be able to keep it exciting going forward. Next up was the women's match for the AEW TBS Championship. This was the champion, Jade Cargill, though she did not have her title because that dastardly Nyla Rose took it from her and has been holding on to it for weeks now. So this was Jade Cargill's chance to get her title back from Nyla. This was a good match for the two of them. It was only about 8 minutes. It was a quicker one. But again, Jade, despite, you know, her incredible record right now that she has being undefeated, TBS champion forever, she's still fairly new. And I think giving her match times, you know, around 10 minutes, something like that, is perfectly fine. Maybe, you know, in a couple years, give her a few more reps, something like that, she'll be able to put on longer, engaging matches, something like that. Look, I love Jade Cargill. She is top for me. I think she's great. I think she has all the potential in the world. If she keeps progressing and gets really better at every aspect of her game, in the ring, on the mic, and things like that, like, she couldn't be like the face of AEW's women's division. She can be what Charlotte is to the WWE for AEW. Truly, I think so. But she has time. She has time to get there. So it was a great match. Good back and forth between them. It was interesting to see the juxtaposition of Jade going against a bigger, stronger opponent in Nyla Rose, where normally in her matches against the other women on the roster, you know, much smaller, not as physically imposing as Jade herself. So this was definitely, got to see a different aspect of Jade's game in this match, which I thought was great. She did a wonderful job. Eventually she did get the pinfall win over Nyla, retains her title and gets the belt back as well. Win-win for her. Excuse me, I'm going to take a sip of a crisp ginger ale real quick. Ah, amazing. Man, this is a lot harder when it's just one person talking. You just keep going and going. next match on the card was the four-way for the Ring of Honor World Championship. That is your champion, the Ocho, Chris Jericho, defending against Bryan Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, and his very own Sammy Guevara. This was a great match. Great match. You knew the story they were going to tell going into it of Sammy and Jericho being on the same page, with the Blackpool Combat Club on the same page to an extent, but what we've seen before, the Combat Club guys are not ones to shy away from some personal competition, if you will. And we got to see that very early on. Bryan Danielson and Claudio finding a moment where it's just the two of them in the ring, got a good Ring of Honor handshake in there, and then they started fighting each other. We knew that was going to happen. And then the rest of the story in the match, of course, was seeing the tiny hints of dissension between Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara, the two we thought they had an agreement, they had an understanding here. But Sammy, you know, he started to see these opportunities of, hey, I could win the Ring of Honor World Championship. I could win a world champion, or be a world champion for the first time in my career. This is a huge opportunity. I shouldn't let this go to waste. So we start to see little bits of dissension between the two of them until eventually it's a complete free-for-all. They turn on each other. They start fighting each other. They start fighting Danielson and Castagnoli. It was great. A lot of close near falls in this as well, especially towards the end. A lot of moments where I was convinced, oh, Bryan Danielson is getting this belt. And ultimately for Jericho to pick up the win in a sort of botched spot. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, they recovered perfectly fine. But Claudio had Sammy in a he was doing the airplane spin. His signature move thing, and Jericho's supposed to run in and do like a jumping Judas effect into Claudio. So he went for the jump, and I get it. That's really hard to time with a fucking, you know, Claudio's spinning a human around like a helicopter. So it's tough, and he went for the jump and just shorted it. So he didn't really get the elbow up to Claudio's face. He more of kind of like hit him in the chest abdomen area. And Claudio was like, I can't really sell that. So he drops Guevara. Jericho gets up, realizes his mistake, and just immediately runs for Claudio, hits a pretty flush Judas effect for the three. And that's perfectly fine. It was a good recovery for a tiny little hiccup that hopefully most people didn't notice. But great match. Just came in under 22 minutes. Second longest match on the show. But very good as well. Super exciting. The next match on the card, the return to the ring of Saraya after nearly 5 years away from it against Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. So, great match here. Both two very, like, beloved competitors that the crowd's going to love. You have Britt Baker, the queen of AEW. Fans are going to love Britt no matter what she does. And then the return of Saraya. Saraya is... She's a great competitor. She has absolutely done so much for women's wrestling in the past 10 years that not many other women can claim to have been so, uniquely important to, I guess. And this was a good return for her. Again, I think I approach it with a little hesitation, just as some people do. Of understanding what her injury was and why she was taken off the shelf for so long. But I'm not a doctor myself, so if she has doctors clearing her for in-ring competition, then I have nothing to say. I wish her the best, and I hope, you know, that they're safe out there. And they absolutely were. It was a great return for Saraya. She did eventually get the win. Which was exciting. I feel like this match, the only thing this match suffered from was the fact that it was after the six-man tag, which was wild, and then it was just after the four-way Ring of Honor match that was also a very long, very exciting match. So even though it was this incredible return for Saraya, the crowd definitely felt a little lackluster for this one. Not as enthusiastic, a little quieter. It's bound to happen. You can't always predict the perfect spot on the card for where you want a match to be and where the crowd's going to be the most engaged. So you just have to do the best with what you have. And I thought these ladies did great, great return for Saraya. I'm excited to see what they do with her going forward. The next match was the three-way match for the AEW TNT Championship. Just some big meaty men slapping meat on this one. This was great. We had Wardlow, the champion, defending against Samoa Joe and Powerhouse Hobbs. Great match. Good storytelling, too, on for how we set this one up, I thought, at least, in the coming weeks of, you know, the War Joe tag team that they had with Hobbs showing up to be a thorn in Wardlow's side, spurning Wardlow to, you know, kind of get in his head and really not consider the threat who was always in the room, being Samoa Joe. Great match. Honestly, I had my pick on this was I actually had chosen Powerhouse Hobbs to get that belt. Hobbs isn't my favorite guy out of these three, but I think he's got a lot of potential, and I thought putting the AEW TNT title on him would be good right now, not even necessarily for him so much, but because we have Ring of Honor, I think it's Final Battle or whatever pay-per-view is coming up next, on the horizon, Samoa Joe being the Ring of Honor TV champion, I thought that would be a great time to have Wardlow face Samoa Joe at that pay-per-view for his title, so you can give the TNT title to Hobbs, have him defend it against some other people. But they ultimately decided, let's make Samoa Joe a double champion, giving him the TNT belt. And look, I'm never going to say no to Samoa Joe winning and getting all the championships. I love Samoa Joe. He's great. So maybe going forward, maybe at this Ring of Honor pay-per-view, we're going to see Joe defend both belts potentially. I'm curious to see how, I guess, how Tony Khan is going to, you know, if he's going to be very open to AEW defending their titles on Ring of Honor shows, and vice versa. Obviously we've seen a lot of Ring of Honor titles defended on AEW. But I'm excited to see that. I think it'll be good. Moving right along, the next match on the list was this great tag match, Sting and Darby Allin facing off against Jay Lethal and old J-E-double-F-J-A-double-R-E-double-T, Jeff Jarrett himself. This match was exactly what we thought it was going to be. Immediately sort of spills out into the arena. It's a Darby staple of being less than a match and more of a spectacle, and that's not a problem at all. Darby does it great, and this was really good. We got to see a lot of incredible spots. Sting diving off multiple structures in and outside the ring. Darby doing his Darby stuff. It was great. I really enjoyed it. I did love the spot of Jeff Jarrett hitting Darby mid coffin drop in the air with the guitar. I thought that was a great spot, great idea there. ultimately for Sting and Darby to get the pin, the win on this one. I thought that was great. It was the right choice. I'm curious to see what capacity Jeff Jarrett's going to be used going forward, if he's going to wrestle frequently, kind of like Sting does, or if he's looking to be more of a backstage kind of person. We'll see. Jeff Jarrett's not my favorite, but he's entertaining in certain aspects. So I'll take that. Nothing wrong with it. Next match. This was the AEW Women's World Championship. Tony Storm, the champion, defending against Jamie Hayter. Now, look, I was very hyped for this match. This might have been my second, third most hyped match of the night. And that's because I was drinking that Haterade, man. I love Jamie Hayter. I was all about it. I thought it was the time to give her the belt. And Tony Khan agreed with me. This was a great match between the two of them. I loved it. I think, again, they did great of playing up the story of how well these two women knew each other. They were roommates during quarantine. They've you know, trained together for years. They know each other in and out. So very good match between the two of them. I think absolutely this match got the most crowd engagement from the other women's matches on the show. And that could have been the placement. It could have just been, you know, this was the world championship. A lot of people really invested in Jamie Hayter going into this. It was a lot of fun. A longer match, the longest women's match of the night, 15 minutes, which was great. Jamie Hayter gets the win. She is your new interim AEW World Women's Champion. So what does that mean going forward? I was convinced that whoever won this, Thunder Rosa would come out post-match to, you know, announce her return, declare she wants her belt back, whatever. But she wasn't. And that, I mean, I have no idea. That could have been a scheduling thing. Maybe she's not ready to come back. At this point, I'm kind of curious. I'm getting a little worried as to what her status is and if she is going to come back. And at what point, if Tony Khan, like, at what point does he have to clarify, like, you know, this interim title is now just the title. I'm not sure how they would do that. I would like to think that they would just be, well, since you have the interim belt, you're just the champion now. It feels a little lackluster, sure. But, you know, I don't know the inner workings of this, and I'm not sure what Thunder Rosa's status is. So I'm curious to see where that goes going forward. But I'm also curious because, I mean, an interim champion in pro wrestling, while it has been done before several times, I don't really know how it works that well. So, like, my question now is, since Toni Storm technically was never the actual women's champion. She was only the interim champion. She won the interim belt and then lost the interim belt. Does that mean that she is now a former women's champion? Does that go on her record of a former AEW Women's World Champion? I don't know. I guess we'll see going forward and how that works out. See, this is why we need Andrew here, because he knows all the good sports stuff that I don't know, because I only watch one sport. but I guess we'll see going forward. I'm excited for Jamie Hayter being the Women's World Champion. I'm see what stories they can tell with that going forward. second to last match of the night, the acclaimed your AEW World Tag Team Champions, Max Caster and Anthony Bowens, defending their titles for the third time against Swerve and Our Glory, Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee. So this being the rubber match here between these two teams, I was a little sour going into it, just that we'd seen this match twice before. I'm not the biggest fan of Swerve and Our Glory as a team, not because I think they're a bad team. I just think they're both much better as single stars, and I wish they would be utilized that way. Keith Lee he's freaking Keith Lee. Like, you could put Keith Lee in the world title picture tomorrow if you want. So I understand giving him something to do with a tag team, but I just feel like you could use him better than that. And we're probably going to get that going forward. At the end of this match, we saw the ultimate disillusion of Swerve and Our Glory. I think that was the final straw with the end of this team. Keith Lee, sick of Swerve Strickland's nonsense and abandoning him in the middle of the ring to fend for himself. Swerve gets double teamed by the Acclaimed, and ultimately the Acclaimed get the pinfall victory. Still your AEW World Tag Team Champions. Great match, coming in under 20 minutes as well. Of the trios, of the trilogy, this was a great one. Probably not my favorite. It's weird. So, like, my favorite match was probably the first one, even though the Acclaimed didn't win that match and very clearly should have won that match. But the first one, like, man, you can't recreate that energy that was in the arena for that first match. It was something else, man. It just, you could feel it through the TV, honestly, is where I was at. I love that one. The second one was great, ultimately, because, you know, you did crown the Acclaim champions deservedly. But this third match wasn't bad by any means. It was a great match, great end to the trilogy. And I'm excited to see what the Acclaim does post this, and then Swerve and Keith Lee hopefully going their separate ways and pursuing some titles on their own or something. And now, that was quick, ladies and gentlemen. We have moved right along. We are at the main event. MJF cashing in his casino ladder poker chip to challenge Jon Moxley for the AEW World Championship. So, man, this was a great match. Great story told. I like the build-up to this match. This was where, you know, MJF he's riding that face wave right now. He's got such positive fan engagement. And that's really tough for a character like MJF, a character that is so, at its core, is such a heel and has to be a heel. Like, I can't even picture a face MJF, like, what that even looks like. Like, can you imagine MJF going out there and you know, giving a John Cena promo, talking about never giving up on your dreams and you know, all fighting your hardest and standing up for the little guy? Like, it just doesn't make sense with his character. So they were in a interesting, tough place where MJF is gonna get cheered no matter what he does. He has that face energy right now, and the crowds decide how they feel about the performers. And right now, people want to cheer MJF. Even if he can walk out there and call them all fat idiots, and they're gonna cheer him. So, the correct strategy here is to lean into that. And I think they did. I think they absolutely swerved us with a great twist at the end. Didn't see coming. I'm curious to see their plans going forward with that. So, the match itself, longest match on the card, coming in just under 24 minutes, but understandable. Your main event, your world championship, love it. This was a good match. It was fun because you could feel, like I was saying, like MJF had that face energy. Mox was fully heel, fully working heel in this match. The crowd was booing everything he did. Mox is taunting them, yelling back, giving them the finger. Like it was great. Honestly, it was a lot of fun to see Mox work such a heel after he's been, you know, the face of the company, the good guy for so long. It was fun to see him kind of, you know, work those heel muscles that we know he's capable of. But it was a very good match. A lot of great spots. The climax of the whole story was MJF deciding to there was the ref bump, of course. MJF breaking out the diamond ring to use that to win. And William Regal, who's on commentary, of course, he runs down to the ring onto the ringside. And he's yelling at MJF. He's like, don't you dare. Don't you even think about it. Because leading up to this, we had that big promo between the two of them. And MJF talking about, like, you know what? I'm going to earn this. I'm going to win this belt the right way so none of you can say that I don't deserve it. And Regal spurred him on. Regal was like, that's what I want. That's what I want to see. I want to see you prove to yourself that you can do this. And so MJF breaks out the ring and Regal runs down. He's yelling at him. He's like, don't you dare. Don't you even think about it. And you know what? MJF sees him and he says, you know what? I don't need this. So he throws the ring away. He says, I don't need this. There's a scuffle between him and Mox. We get a second ref down there and then a second ref bump. Ref goes down again. So at this point, the twist happens. And William Regal, the figurehead of the Blackpool Combat Club, tosses in the brass knucks to MJF, who then uses them, crushes John Moxley in the head without the ref seeing. First ref comes to from his bump. MJF, 1, 2, 3, is your new AEW World Champion. Wow. Great storytelling. Look, for many, many reasons, many angles. Number one, MJF won the belt in such an MJF fashion, but they made it a surprise somehow. Like, it's MJF, like, knowing everything we do about his character that we have for the past few years of AEW. Obviously, this is how he's going to win the title. But they swerved us. They tricked us into believing, oh no, he's going to do it the right way. He's going to win it the legit way. And then he didn't. It was brilliant. What a way to preserve the character in such a great choice. And you have the potential heel turn of William Regal now. And the question I have, of course, going forward is, you know, what does this mean for the future of Blackpool Combat Club? What does it mean for the future of Regal himself? Are we going to put Regal in MJF's corner? Or was this kind of like a one-time thing? Is Regal out of the Blackpool Combat Club? Is the Blackpool Combat Club dead? Like, I have a lot of questions going forward. The main event left me with a lot of questions. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm very excited to see where they go forward with this. I'm really excited to see MJF's promo on Dynamite and what he's going to talk about. And we're really going to get an idea for the character and what his title reign is going to look like going forward. So super excited about that. Overall, great. Top to bottom, this was a really good pay-per-view from AEW. Not the best one they've ever done, probably not, but absolutely not the worst either. It was very, very good. I loved it. A lot of great matches, moments that stood out That cage match between Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus was very good. Obviously, the six-man between the Elite and Death Triangle was very good. Jamie Hayter and Toni Storm, incredible women's match. Jamie Hayter getting the belt as well. It was a great, great night of wrestling. I was thoroughly entertained. Yeah, it was a good time. So, going forward, again, I hope everyone... hope everyone has a good holiday coming up. Obviously, stay safe. You know, eat all the food you can. We are going to get back to it after Thanksgiving passes, and we're going to get that legal episode out for you guys where we can talk about all the juicy legal jargon going on in the wrestling world. It might be one or two episodes. We'll see what we can. And then we'll plan for... Christmas moving forward, and then you gotta understand Royal Rumble's right around the corner, and that means the road to WrestleMania is also right around the corner, so stay excited for that. This was a lot of fun. We'll see what we do going forward. I'm sure, speaking for Andrew as well, he's excited to record again once he's done doing his very important things. So like to leave you all with a reminder, if you want us to answer your questions in the kayfabe, submit them to our website, muchadowrestling.com, on Twitter at adowrestling, assuming Twitter is still a thing, or you can email them to us at muchadowrestling@gmail.com. And as always, we leave you with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare: if wrestling be the food of love, a fight on. I don't have anything to say because it's just me, so I'm just going to take a big drink of ginger ale. Delish.